Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. It is Tuesday, May 12th at the time of this recording. Actually, wasn't going to record until tomorrow, but been suffering from some insomnia and the FOMO. And in case you're not 20 years old, that's the fear of missing out. If you've ever been an 8-year-old kid and had all your buddies calling you and telling you what they're getting for Christmas and been circling Toys R Us. That's dating me a little bit because Toys R Us is out of business now. But you get kind of get the idea of what has been going on in my life here lately. So I don't know if I've mentioned it, but I've got a friend that is a walnut broker in Northern California, been doing it for like 40 years, where he has a bunch of connections in his area and, you know, wider area where he lives. And he brokers walnut burls. And these are not like, you know, these are massive burls, some, you know, 10,000 pound burls that are, you know, 6, 8, 10 feet across. So what happens is, I guess, these walnut orchards, when they hit a certain age, they, stop producing as well. So they have to take out the old orchards, replant and put in new trees so that they'll get, you know, improved walnut production. And so he's got a network of farmers that, will reach out to him when it's time to, take out their old walnuts, and he will, then go and dig up all the walnut burls and then sell them. And I mean, these are like super high-end burls that end up on the dashboards of cars and you know, get sent out all over the place, and super high-end stuff. Like the buyers fly in with Lear jets and and buy these things. So crazy amount of money that goes into these things, you know, way out of a Boyer's price range. But because I befriended this guy, he's been very kind and appreciates what I do from an artistic standpoint, and he'll feed me the scraps, right? So he got into an orchard. I went out there, I want to say, man, when was that? It had to have been about a year or so ago. And he loaded me up with a whole bunch of walnut and some, he also sells gunstock blanks out of this walnut. And they'll go to like Holland & Holland, H&H, these really high-end firearms. And a single gunstock blank could sell for a couple thousand bucks. But it's got to be like perfect. And so he's been giving me the seconds. So like if it has a little check, a drawing split in it, which I can totally work around cutting it out, then he'll just give them to me. And he's so earlier this year, since the time I was out there last year, I literally came home with a truckload of walnut, just totally hooked me up. And almost no sooner did I get back home than he calls me up and's like, hey, you know that truckload of walnut you just went home with? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, I've got like at least double that amount of Claro walnut burl. Do you want it? And oh yeah, of course I want it. So I was gonna, you know, I had it all set up to buy it from him, and I was supposed to drive back there at Christmas time and pick it up, but it that trip didn't end up happening. So in the meantime, he gets another orchard, 80 acres, this massive orchard, and he starts cutting on it. And it just like the holy grail of walnut orchards when it comes to wood. And he said that in 40 years of doing this, this is the best walnut orchard he's ever seen. And so he's been calling me up, you know, sporadically over the springtime, torturing me with tales of how beautiful this walnut is and texting me pictures, and I'm going nuts over here. And then meanwhile, the guy that introduced me to him, so I was driving home this weekend and my buddy calls me and, you know, is telling me about all this stuff and the scrap piles and burn piles and chipper piles and how this, he's totally overwhelmed and there's way more walnut than he could ever deal with. And he's got like he's got a deck of walnut burls, a loading deck or landing deck of 2 acres of walnut burls, just a massive amount of walnut burls. So I hope I'm not boring you guys to death, but this is totally exciting for me. So my buddy that introduced him, who's also a woodworker of sorts, he integrates woodworking into the other medium that he does. He called me up, or I texted him after I got off the phone with him, and he called me up later that evening and went on for like 20 minutes. He's like, dude, I went out and dropped $600 on a chainsaw just to go through the scrap piles. So that are the burn piles and chipper piles. And he's like, this is the tightest grain three-way curl. And he's got black walnut, Bastogne walnut, Claro walnut, English walnut. And so for the last several days, I've been totally like, that's, I can't get it out of my mind. I've been rearranging my schedule because apparently there's only like 2 weeks before they're going to be doing burn piles and feeding the stuff to the chipper, which just, I mean, it kills me thinking about that. I don't want a toothpick of high grade walnut to go into a chipper, let alone a burn pile. And so I had my plans for the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks all scheduled out and was supposed to go out there to California in 3 weeks to pick up this walnut, but that's like a week too late. So I've been rescheduling everything, trying to sweet talk my wife into totally busting up her schedule to make this trip out there because she was going to come out with me. So absolute chaos. And so I woke up at 3:15 this morning, tossing and turning, dreaming of walnut, and it's just like, heck with it, I'm getting up. So we're getting an early edition, long roundabout way of Patrick McManus here while I continue to scheme about how I'm going to get out there to pick up the mother load of walnut. So today we're going to do A Fine and Pleasant Misery. Again, this is one of my favorites, man. If you get any book or need to get any book, one of his, the Fine and Pleasant, A Fine and Pleasant Misery can't be, it's got to be at the top in my opinion. This one's Further Teachings of Rancid Crabtree. Graham sliced off 4 great slabs from a loaf of her homemade bread. She spread them with butter, piled on a couple pounds of ham, slices of onions, pickles, cheese, and the leftovers from the previous night's supper. Then she stuffed the sandwiches in a paper bag and thrust them into my hands. But I tell you, I don't need food, I protested. Rancid is going to teach me how to live off the land. Shoot, my grandmother said, waving a butcher knife at me. That old fool don't know any more about living off the land than he does about working. Now take those sandwiches and don't give me any sass. On my way over to Rancid's cabin, I stuffed the sandwiches down the front of my shirt, hoping he wouldn't notice I was carrying contraband. What you hiding thar, the old man said the instant he caught sight of me. You got a watermelon under your shirt? Nah, I answered, embarrassed. Graham made me bring along a couple of sandwiches in case I got hungry, Rancid hooted. That old widder woman, when she gonna cut you loose from her apron strings and let you be a man? I don't know, I said. I told her you were going to teach me how to live off the land, but she pulled a knife and made me take the sandwiches anyway. Yep, she's a mean un, all right, Rancid said. Wall, them sandwiches won't hurt nothing and might come in handy in case we has an emergency. I should explain that Graham and Rancid were natural enemies. Graham possessed all the qualities Rancid despised in a person. She was practical, hard-working, neat, clean, methodical, and never smoked, drank, or told lies. "She ain't human," Rancid often complained. Graham claimed Rancid was the only person she'd ever known who was totally lacking in character. By character, she meant a tendency towards work. A man could rustle cows, steal chickens, and rob banks in his spare time, and Graham would say of him, "Rufus may have some bad ways, but I'll tell you this, he's a good worker. He ain't totally no good like some folks by the name of Rancid Crabtree I could mention, but I won't." To Graham, being a good worker excused a lot of shortcomings, but it wasn't the sort of lifestyle that appealed to me at the age of 12. Since Rancid was the only person I'd ever known who hadn't once been caught red-handed in the act of holding a job, I figured he must have some secret, and I studied him the way other kids in school studied their arithmetic. Because he didn't work, Rancid always had time to give you, not just little pinched-off minutes, but hours and days and even whole weeks. He was a fine example for a kid to pattern himself after. On this particular day, Rancid and I were going to hike back in the mountains and spend the night in a lean-to we would build ourselves. All we could take with us were some fishing line and hooks, some twine and our knives, and as it turned out, the 2 4-pound sandwiches. The morning was one of those impeccable specimens found only in early July in the Rocky Mountains, particularly when it is only the 12th July you have known in your life. That was back in the old days before environment had been discovered, and there were only trees and blue sky and water moving swift and clear. Hiking along behind the old lean woodsman, I listened to the soft humming of summer and paid attention to keeping my toes pointed Indian fashion as I splashed through the shallow pools of sunlight on the trail. It was a very pleasant day to start learning how to live off the land so I would never have to work. We hiked hard for the first hour to shake off the last lingering shards of civilization, and then slowed our paces as the trail began winding up into the mountains. Far down below in the patchwork of fields, we could see the farmers wrestling with their hay crops. We laughed. After a while, Rancid started giving me living off the land lessons. The first thing he had me do was to smear my face with mud. "This har mud will keep off the mosquitoes," Rancid explained. I smeared on copious amounts of mud, because if there was one thing in the world I was interested in keeping off, it was mosquitoes. I had heard plenty about mosquitoes from Rancid before. They were vicious flying creatures that sometimes would swarm out of the woods and suck the blood from your body. Since I had spent a good deal of time in the woods and never seen a mosquito, I hoped they were merely a figment of Rancid's imagination. His imagination was crammed with all sorts of weird and interesting figments. If mosquitoes did exist, the mud did a pretty good job of keeping them off. It even worked pretty well on the mosquitoes. Another rare creature apparently known only to Rancid was the eagle. He pointed to a large bird circling high on the mountain peak. "Look there, boy, that's an eagle." The bird was too high for me to make out any of its features, but in the years since, I have frequently seen high-flying birds that I assume to be eagles, so I'm pretty sure they exist. Rancid told me that eagles were so big they often carried off half-grown cows in their claws, and as a result were not much loved by ranchers. "But hell," he said, "eagles got a right to live in, too." Rancid had his own system of ornithological classification. There were three basic groups of birds: little birds, medium birds, and big birds. A few birds were referred to by their common names: ducks, doves, grouse, pheasants, and eagles. Rancid's system of ornithology worked just as well on identifying rarer birds. "What's that bird?" I would ask Rancid. "That there's what you call their little black and white bird with a red head," he would tell me authoritatively. I never ceased to marvel on how Rancid knew all the different types of birds. Just by looking at them, you could tell he knew what he was talking about. Along about noon, I began to feel the first pangs of hunger. I suggested to Rancid that maybe the time had come for us to knock off the nature study and start living off the land, and if it wasn't too much trouble, I'd like to take a look around at the lunch menu. Rancid looked around the land. Ah, figured we'd have huckleberries for lunch, but they're still green. The wild raspberries should be ripe up in the meadows, though. For the time being, why don't you give me them sandwiches your granny packed? Who do you take me for, Mother Nature? I said angrily. You're supposed to teach me how to live off the land. Don't get your tail in a knot, Rancid said. Living off the land takes a powerful lot of thinking, and I think's better if I'm chomping on a sandwich. How now, what did that old widder woman fix us? We split one of the sandwiches, and sure enough, Rancid started thinking better. As soon as we gets done with lunch, we better find us some mushrooms to cook with our game for supper. That's a burn up there, and we can find some mushrooms up there. I was a bit worried about the mushrooms, since my grandmother had told me that Rancid didn't know his fungi from a hole in the ground. Grams says one good way to tell if a mushroom ain't poisonous is to see if the deer have been eating them, I offered. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard thereof, Rancid said with disgust. Deer don't know how much more than your granny does. Mushrooms is little wrinkly pointed things, and toadstools is all the rest. Deer eat toadstools all the time, and it doesn't bother them none. A human being eat a toadstool. The fust thing he knows is he's knocking on the parley gates with one hand and still picking his teeth with the other. Fortunately, we were unable to find any mushrooms in the burn, although I did happen to come across a patch of little wrinkly pointed things not worth the trouble of calling to Rancid's attention. The raspberries in the high mountains meadows were ripe, as Rancid had predicted, but not especially plentiful. Nevertheless, I got a keen sense of living off the land from eating them. Rancid explained at considerable length how to pick and eat wild raspberries and seemed very pleased with himself. Lots of folks don't know wild raspberries is good to eat, he said. I personally have never encountered anyone who didn't know they were good to eat, but I didn't say anything. Graham says even cattails are good to eat, I offered. Ha! Rancid laughed. That silly old woman. It's a wonder she's lived to be 105, what with all her notions about eating poisonous plants. I don't think she's that old, I said. That just goes to show you, Rancid said. Now don't let me hear no more talk of that about eating cattails. Next, Rancid showed me how to set snares for rabbits, an absolute essential for anyone intending to live off the land. Although I knew the basic principle and technology of snares, I never quite understood how you induce the game to stick his head into the loop and trigger the contraption. How do you know the rabbit is going to run into that snare? I asked, peering intently over Rance's shoulder as he worked. He's got a million other places to run. Well, first of all, you have to be smarter than the rabbit, he said with a chuckle. You got to be smarter than the rabbit. Now, help me get these logs over and rocks. What we is going to do is funnel that old rabbit right into our snare, see? We dragged rocks and logs and tree limbs and brush and piled them into a giant opened V that pointed right at the snare. By the time the V was finished, both of us were so hot and tired we were staggering. But I didn't complain because I was learning to live off the land, so I would never have to work. After we had rested a while, Rancid said, Now here's what you do. You climb down behind that thicket over there and make a racket so you drive the rabbits into the funnel. How come we both don't climb down and make a racket, I asked. 'Cause I have to sit up there on the log and shoosh any rabbits that come by way back into the snare. Why can't I do that and you drive the rabbits out? Rancid thought a moment, mopping the sweat off his face with his shirt sleeve. You had any experience shooshing wild rabbits? No. Well, thar you are. Now get yourself down in the thicket and start making a racket. A half hour later, I emerged from the thicket. Rancid was sitting on the log, his elbows resting on his knees, staring vacantly down at the snare. How pant, big a one, pant, did we catch? I asked, sinking to the ground. Rancid rolled a chaw of tobacco around in his cheek. Well, I can say one thing about these blankety-blank rabbits. They is powerful smart. You mean to say we didn't catch any? What would you think about chomping down some nice tender trout roasted on a fire? Rancid said brightly. Don't that sound good? early in the afternoon, we arrived at a little lake tucked away between two mountain peaks. Rance had cut two willow poles and tied fishing line to them. Then we started looking around for grubs to bait the hooks with. As Rance had said, you can never find a grub when you really need one. Savagely, we tore apart rotten logs looking for grubs, the essential link between us and a fish supper. I was beginning to think working might be easier than living off the land. At last we found a small deposit of grubs, tossed them into Rancid's hat, and hurried back down to the lake. By the time we got there, the grubs were choking and gagging, but otherwise in good shape. The trout brazenly committed grand larceny on most of our bait supply, but we managed to land a couple of 8-inchers. "Now I'm going to show you how to build a fire without matches," Rancid said. He made a little bow and stick contraption of the sort I had seen in my Boy Scout handbook. The handbook, however, had not indicated all the good words you were supposed to say in order to get a fire going. Rancid sawed the little bow back and forth furiously on the stick, the spinning of which was supposed to ignite a little pile of shavings. It was all very complicated, and Rancid sweated and panted and swore until his eyes bugged out even more than usual. At last, a little curl of smoke drifted up from the shavings. Rancid threw down the bow, dropped to his belly, and started blowing on the shavings, whereupon the curl of smoke instantly vanished. He rolled over on his back, crumpled the bow and stick in his hands. "Let this be a lesson to you, boy. Don't never go out in the woods without a fistful of matches." "That's what Graham told me," I said. "She made me bring a bunch of matches, even though I told her we wouldn't be needing them." "Gold dang know-it-all woman, give me one of them matches." In a second, Rancid had a fire going. His hands were shaking from exhaustion and rage as he built a little willow grill to cook our fish on. As the flames licked around the two little trout, Rancid stared moodily into the fire. "When we going to build the lean-to?" I asked. "Don't bother me about no lean-to," he growled. He seemed a bit surly, so I decided not to pursue the subject. Then the two fish slipped through the grill into the fire. I stepped back, sneaking a glance at Rancid's face. His eyes, widening slightly, stared at the bits of blackened skin on the willow grill. A tiny quiver ran the length of his lower lip. After a long moment of silence, Rancid said, "We best eat that sandwich, 'cause we is gonna need lots of energy." "To build the lean-to?" I asked. "No," he said, "so we can walk real fast. I figures if we leave now, we can get back home to her house for time for supper." "Graham said she'd have a couple places for us," I said, even though I tried to tell her we'd be gone all night. "That all know-it-all," Rancid said. "I wonder what she's fixing for supper anyhow. I sure hope we ain't going to be a mess of poisonous cattails." All right. Another Patrick McManus. Appreciate you guys hanging in there, and we'll catch up to you on the next one.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I come down for-